Matamua, have you seen conditions like what we saw Saturday, Churchill Park, where the Fiji Drua took on and ended up beating pretty well in the end, the Western Force? They were wild.
It was, it was crazy. I was watching it on my phone, of all things, and I had to kind of keep refreshing it because I was like, geez, the quality is a bit pixelated here. But no, I wasn't seeing things. It was, you wonder, is it a safety? Is there a safety concern there? But, geez, I'm glad they played there and the Fijians showed that they can score tries, in any conditions. But, geez, it was interesting.
Well, funnily enough, actually, Simon Raualua tweeted about that. What's it going to actually take to potentially cancel this game? It was wild for the first half. A good win for the Drua. We'll touch a bit more on that later on. There's some big thorny subjects coming up. The Waratahs, where to next? Do they stick by Darren Coleman? Do they go back to a former coach like Michael Checker? We'll talk about that. An awesome game between the Brumbies and the Reds up at Suncorp Stadium where the Brumbies won 20 points to 19. But we're going to get straight, in fact, to the Rebels GM, Nick Stiles, who's joining us on the other side of this. And a very, very warm welcome to the Rebels GM, Nick Stiles. Nick, congratulations. It's a good win over the Waratahs on the weekend.
Yeah, thanks, Christy. Great to be on the show to start with. But yeah, it was a good win. It wasn't the greatest of games, but you know what it's like when you've had a couple of tough losses and you know so much going on off the field that just to get a win sometimes you don't care how it comes, you take it and then you can springboard off that moving forward.
Yeah, what's it like? It's been an emotional fascinating few months. But when you manage to get a win away from home off the back of a couple of tough ones, that must do so much good for not just the playing group, but everyone that's associated with the Rebels, right?
Absolutely, mate. Yeah, no, we're 3-3, so it's we're going okay. We're not playing our best football yet, but we probably knew with this group that it would take us till deep in the tournament to get to the point where we're playing football that we really feel represents us. But to still be 3-3 at six rounds in, I'll take that any day of the week.
Yeah, and obviously the Drua coming up, and I think it might be the Highlanders after that. So get away a win away from home was quite important, particularly with a difficult probably end to the season.
Yeah, Papa, definitely. Kevin did a really good job in the coaches targeting these three games. You've got to win your first one, but we sort of came into this block of 3 weeks knowing that there were three crucial games for us against the Tars. As you said, the Drua at home on Friday and then another home game against Highlanders. Now, they're all teams that we're going to be competing with for, sort of 7th, 8th, 9th positions and it was crucial to have a really successful 3-week period because they're like double points, aren't they? So, ticked one off and got to go again on Friday against the Drua.
Yeah, Nick, there's been so much that's happened over the opening 6 weeks of the competition. Just from a human point of view, when you get a win on a Friday night, it's the Easter weekend. Are you able to just relax and get away from rugby for a day or two before looking at the next round?
Oh, listen, I think if you speak to players, they can probably say they do. I think they tend to burn wins and losses a lot quicker than what staff do. But no, definitely. Tell you what, it just makes waking up that much better and travelling easier. You don't feel as tired and you've got a spring in your step, but you're definitely in this competition. It's a brutal competition. It's tough to win week in, week out. So unfortunately, with the position we're at the moment, I know I don't have too many minutes, let alone hours or days where I'm not thinking rugby at the moment.
Let's continue with that. It's 6 weeks, this story around the Rebels and their future has just been going on, bubbling in the background really since December, but it started to heat up by the end of January. As the Rebels general manager, you're the guy who's trying to plan for the future really by getting the roster together. So what has that meant for you over the last few months and looking forward? How on earth does the general manager operate in the current environment?
Yeah, listen, it's difficult. I think probably one of the things that through the first 6 weeks of the comp, as journalists do, you talk about performances you break down, who's playing well, areas teams need to improve on. But probably one of the things that hasn't really been discussed a lot about it is how hard it is for us at the moment. No other team in this competition is going through anything like we are. You've got families that a lot of them have relocated down to Melbourne. Uncertainty of what's happening. Players, you know, a lot of guys are signed up for 2 years. They go, well, no, I've got a contract for 2 years. Where I'm playing, who knows? But, you know, hopefully it's Melbourne. If it's not, I don't know where I'll be. Players are off contract, got that uncertainty. Do I have to look overseas? What other opportunities are there for me in Australia? And then staff, like, we're operating under the guise so that we've got three pays left. So it's not easy. And the thing that I'm most proud about is how the group has legitimately stuck together. Now, we've had ups and downs. You know, we've had some, you know, really poor performances along the way. But that's, I reckon, they're not attributed totally to what's going on off the field, but it's got a massive say in everything of what's going on and how we are. So it's not easy. Back to your question is, I felt that, you know, the 3 years I've been here, we've worked really hard on creating a strategy on who we wanted to be. Kevin and the club did a really good job about creating a culture and an environment of who they want to be as a club. And we've sort of got to the point where that now is starting to get ingrained into the group. And then our recruitment, our retention was going really well. So obviously disappointed that there's that uncertainty at the moment with where we are and what it looks like moving forward.
Yeah, and Stilesy, I don't think anyone can, probably underestimate how good the squad you have put together this year. You know, obviously some big signings. Yeah, I'm really interested to hear how you're managing your communication with the players, with what's going on off the field. Obviously, guys will be reading things, hearing things here and there. And, you know, there's an element of where you don't want to distract from the job at hand and playing. However, you know, being quite realistic in the sense that, as you say, people are thinking about, you know, jobs and moving families. How is that communication going and how have you decided to kind of address it?
Yeah, my style is to be, you know, brutally honest and upfront with the players, and you build that trust with them, with staff members as well. And it's hard at the moment because you just don't have the clarity from above. There's a voluntary administration process that's going on. So that there's all these sort of legalities that are there and that are very real. And for us being in the middle of it all, you just don't know. So my approach has been is just to any news I get, keep everyone informed. Don't try and talk rubbish to them and lie. You know, let's be open and honest with the pain or the suffering that you might be going through. Or if you're getting grief at home, come and talk to me and I'll try and help you out with whatever I know. And probably the main thing is just keeping those lines of communication as open as they can be. And what happens in the press, don't read it, because we all know, Christy, everything that you read in the press isn't true. And take that with a grain of salt. And not saying the Raw at all. You know, there's some incredible writers on the Raw. But, don't get sucked into speculation, because there's so much of it out there that's just not true.
Well, it's April 1 at the moment. Just turned April. We're heading into the seventh match of the regular season. That's almost halfway through. Have you got an idea of when things might come to a head around your future? Could it be a fortnight's time, a month, at the end of the season? Is there any form of understanding around when the Rebels' future will be known?
No, nothing definitive at all. We've got a Zoom meeting with Phil Waugh on Thursday. He's talking to the group. He hasn't spoken to the group as a whole, and I mean staff as a group, since everything happened. So it'll be good to hear from Phil again, just to get an update from Rugby Australia. And then there's other timelines around the VA process and if one of the things that it's amazing, isn't it? You know, when you go looking for a new car and you're driving around the streets, you see all the new cars out there that you're looking at. That's a funny thing. Now, going through this administration process, you know, I'd never really delved into the deep world of accountancy and the ins and outs and the laws of administration. And now you open up the paper and there's so much of it going on. And you read everything, you go, yeah, I know what that means. I know what that is. But there's a thing called a DOCA, which is a deed of company arrangement. It's basically what the directors and administrators put together to try and work their way out of administration. And I know that's looming up soon. So it'll be interesting to see what that is and to see where that sort of forces or, you know, where that leads the future of the Melbourne Rebels to.
Have you just put all your eggs in the Rebels basket, or do you yourself have to start thinking about what the future might be?
Oh, everyone has to, Christy, and that's probably the hard part. You know, it's you know, I can't just sit here and hope that in 3 months' time the Rebels will still be here. I've still got confidence that there is still hope for the club moving forward. But everyone's definitely looking, and that's the hard part because we're so. Pup's been down there. He knows there's great people involved in the club. We're passionate about the club. The local Victorian community are just outstanding, and you're so invested into the place. And so you want us to be here, but we've also got to be realists and make sure that we've got some options that if the worst did happen, that you can move on to something. Because we saw how brutal it was, like when Rugby Australia took over the club on Feb 13 or 14, and, you know, there was probably 10 people made redundant, one being the CEO, that he was redundant that day and his pay stopped that day. And so we know how brutal it is, and we've seen what's happened. So everyone's definitely, you know, got an eye elsewhere.
We might get to like someone like a Taniela Tupou, and you know him better than anyone pretty much in Australian rugby, I'd say, in a moment. But before then, and you touched on the community aspect of rugby in Melbourne, what have you noticed around rugby in Melbourne, having been in Japan with Kintetsu, having played all around the world and obviously spent so many years embedded in Queensland rugby, which is one of the real bedrocks of Australian rugby and the foundations there?
Yeah, as a pup's been here, he's from Victoria originally himself, family down here. And I was the same. I was actually born in Melbourne, left when I was a young kid, and still got a lot of family down in Melbourne. And the interest in rugby down here is real. It's not make-believe. It's not fake. There's these fantastic communities that now of players, both boys and girls, that have grown up now watching the Melbourne Rebels and have got something to aspire to be now. And they're coming through the pathways. And, you know, I could tell you a couple of players that I believe we've got now, sort of 18, 19, 20-year-old bracket, will be future Wallabies from Victoria. So it's a really good community down here. And I do worry if the Rebels didn't exist, what would happen to those pathways.
So Taniela Tupou, he's the guy that's been in the press for so much over the time, probably right throughout his career since he was a YouTube hit sensation. He's a guy that's been linked to Leinster in Ireland. There's big million-dollar contracts in France floating about. I'm sure he'd be able to get one himself in Japan. Matt Tamua last week said that, you know, overseas wouldn't be the worst thing for him. What do you see in a Taniela Tupou, and do you think that Australian rugby is best served by having him on shore regardless of what happens over the next 12 months with the Rebels?
Yeah, definitely. Firstly, he's locked in for 2 years. I think there's, you know, all these paper talk coming out saying that he's Leinster's interested, and that's great. Well, they can be interested with him outside after 2025 because he's contracted through to then. Whether we're here or not, he's got a binding agreement with Rugby Australia. But I personally believe with what Taniela's had over the last couple of years with the injury profile that he's had, he's best being managed very closely at the moment just to get his body back to full strength. I reckon you've seen his performances increasing and getting better each game of Super Rugby. Definitely not at his best yet, but I believe that's also when you're that big and powerful. I never had that issue, you know. I was a plotter, you know. But when you're that big and that powerful, like, you put so much stress on your body, and then I think he's just been getting so much confidence back into his body to go and do what he can do best, and you're starting to see him be dominant at scrummaging time and again and starting his hands on the ball. And I firmly believe that's coming from that belief he's getting back in him. I think we've got to keep pushing him to get him to be the best tight head in the world, and that would be achieved by being here in Australia for at least the next 12 months, I believe.
Yeah, and it's really interesting to see the impact he had off the bench. Like, props probably a little bit of a different position where, you know, there's probably a decent argument saying that the last 30 is maybe more important than, the first 30, particularly with, you know, crucial scrum penalties and how, you know, more mistakes. I think it was great to see him because he is a game breaker, isn't he? He really had a huge impact off the bench.
Yeah, fantastic. Came on. We a dominant scrum against the feed. We've been able to control field position pretty well through our scrum this season, with getting penalties, getting cheap meters down the field, and then the try. We just feel at the moment, Tilly's back to peak fitness, that coming off the bench is probably the best thing for him. Sam Talakai has been doing a fantastic job this year with his work rate and his scrummaging work as well. So he's wearing down the opposition, and then, Big Thor's coming off the bench and finish them off. And full credit to the coaching staff on the weekend. You know, we sort of looked at the draw early on in the year. We saw that the Tars would be coming off a 6-day turnaround from Fiji. We didn't know it would be an extra 10 minutes of game in 40-degree heat, which was fantastic for us. totally shattered. But we opted not to really rest, but a couple of players were taken out of the team. Matty Gibbon, he hadn't been performing his best, so we took him out. He came back into the side, performed really well. Felipe had been out for other reasons, but there was another fresh body there. Derby, we brought into the side. So we sort of felt by Kevin being tactical about bringing some fresh bodies into the game, that they'd perform really well and be able to win the game to death. And part of that was Taniela's performances coming off the bench. And sometimes it works out well and sometimes it doesn't, but it worked to plan on Saturday, on Friday.
Yeah, I think that was pretty evident from my point of view. I mentioned in the podcast last week with the Waratah, flipping sides here, the Waratahs coming off a 6-day turnaround playing with a very kind of hardly changed 15. It's a big old ask. And I think, with Taniela's impact off the bench, you probably saw a flow-on effect with the Waratahs losing Angus Bell, and then the young fellas just come up and, he started the game. Only reason I can see that being the case is because they probably didn't want him against Taniela at the end of the game.
100%. But ironically, then that allowed us to get dominant in the scrum early in the game, and nothing against him. He's a young kid, debut. Hope he's got a bright future ahead of him. But it just allowed us to get in the front foot and paint the picture to the referee that we're dominant early, and that then when you brought your power on in the second half, that we're able to continue that and finish the Tars off.
Someone people might be interested in, I know I am, Pono Famasili. He's a guy that went and started last year for the Wallabies at times, and he can't get a crack at the moment with the Rebels. Where do you see his future, and is he close to a return to the Rebels? Is he going to be seen in the back row? Is he best served at another state or province like the Waratahs, where he might be able to go on a loan system perhaps and get some minutes, because at the moment we can't find any at the moment with the Rebels?
Yeah, difficult. Listen, you look at who's been successful in Australian rugby, and you look at the Brumbies. Matty's obviously been down there as well, and I think the Brumbies have done a fantastic job around consistency of performance by dominating up front and having really good depth in the front row. Alatoa's been out injured, but he'll come back in. But, normally they've got Slipper and Alatoa, and they used to have Scotty Seo. So they had this tremendous depth up front that you're able to rotate those blokes through, and you knew that your scrum would never be under pressure and you can get front football. And so I looked at that and I thought, we needed to get really strong up front and get really good depth, and that brings competition. And I think Talakai's brought out his best rugby, even though he's 32, 33, getting close to 100 games of Super Rugby. He's playing his best rugby he's ever played. And Taniela's obviously being Taniela's put pressure on Pono in the past. I think he's probably been able to get a position in the team without having been at his peak, and that's not the case. So he's fit and he's training well and he's ready to go, but he just can't crack a position in the 23 at the moment.
Yeah, that's not the worst thing in the world, is it? So
and you want it, you get injuries, and that's why increasing the depth of the front row and the squad was important, that as you go through the season, that we know we've got Pono who's desperate to get out there. And if we do pick up an injury, you've got a Wallaby who's been at the World Cup ready to come in and ready to go. So hopefully, for everyone, we get to see him out there sooner and later and see him then put pressure on the other two.
I think it's good to see as well. We've probably been accused, Australian rugby, of handing out jerseys to guys who might not have been prepared, and seeing this, a system that works and a system how it should work, and we almost then ask the question, oh, should he be moving? But it shouldn't be easy to get a Rebels jersey on the weekend. You should have to earn it.
Yeah, you've got to earn it. And you've got to do that through training hard and preparing well. And it's not just what you do on the field. Matty, you played so many games of rugby because you're a thorough professional. And you know what you've got to put in away from the club to make sure you get to be your best. And that's probably something, you know, I love Ponne, but he's still, you know, had his times where he's fluctuated what he does away from the field, which then puts him in position that he might get injured and then he starts this big circle again. So, you know, I do think he's a very good footballer. And we've seen with that competition, rather than being handed a jersey with the competition, I think he's made some really positive changes that hopefully on the back of that he becomes a better footballer for it in the long run.
I can tell you, Nick, you're not going to be handing the Waratahs the Western Force, who are a bit skinny up front at the moment. You're not going to be giving Ponne to them anytime soon. Just Taniela, where are the one or two areas that you see that he needs to address? And a little bit of that's luck with keeping fit on the paddock. But where are the one or two areas that he needs to address to really, truly fulfil his potential and go from being internationally respected to being really internationally feared and take a Wallabies side, you know, against the Lions and take it to them?
Yeah, good question there. You know, when you get to international level, he's had some really good moments, but you want to see that tight head performance that he's consistent week in, week out, that he just totally dominates and we can be led around the park by him. But I do honestly think it's probably about those repeat work efforts for him. You know, you can do the big run, you can have the powerful scrum, but in international rugby, it's around the ability to back up those, you know, really good involvements regularly. And so there's that repeatability for him, which I think to become as good a player as he can be or should be will be to nail those aspects, which a lot of that's physically for him. A lot of that's getting back to being full strength with his body. And don't forget, it was funny when I recruited him, we put a presentation together and I showed him the amount of minutes he played at the Reds for the previous 3 years. I think he was the second most highest minutes in the whole competition of any position. So he'd been really flogged to death up there and you know, won a lot of games for him. So don't blame them at all. But he knew his body was about to break and it did. So hopefully now we can get him back to being durable and being able to have those repeat efforts.
Stilesy, the modern game, like particularly you look last year Test match, South Africa having a 7-1 split and you know, really using their bench as a tactical kind of advantage. With guys like Taniela, do you go, you know, we got to have them prepared to play 70 minutes or, as you say, or like, is it okay that he is a heavy man, you know, and rugby is a, you know, a heavy man sport? Is it okay because we know we've got, you know, a good bench that can come on 30? Like, what are these, has this changed over time?
Yeah, definitely change that thinking. Listen, we went 6-2 on the weekend for that fact. You know, we wanted to be able to bring out, we thought the Tars would be tired and we'd bring fresh forwards on and big numbers of forwards and be brutal with them. But you lose a back 2 or 3 minutes into the game and you're going, geez, I wish it wasn't 6-2 or 7-1 this week. But you overcome it with some versatility. But you're right. I think that whole mindset around a player being, especially a forward, tight head prop being an 80-minute player, that's gone. You want them to be able to play 40 to 50 minutes, to have high involvements in those 40 to 50 minutes, but really quality performance, you know, involvements. And I think that's where Taniela is going to be now, is that 40 to 50-minute player that can change a game or win a game.
We're going to let you go in a moment, Nick. It looks like you're getting a bit cold out there. That's what happens when you're out in the penthouse, right?
No, it's actually been beautiful weather. It's been a lot of fool's gold here in Melbourne around the weather because, you know, once winter starts, you know, autumn comes, she turns quickly, and today was rainy today and pretty cool tonight. I think they even had to suspend the Easter Monday AFL game for a while for lightning. So it's a bit fresh out here. Penthouse, I don't know about the penthouse. I'm 56 floors up of 57, so I'm not maybe sub-penthouse.
Well, Colin got a win on the weekend against the Lions, so you'll be thrilled about that. Before we let you go, Andrew Callaway missed the game. Jake Strawn obviously left the field early. Lockie Anderson came off with a concussion. Josh Kemeny missed the game. Where are these four guys likely in the picture for this really important game against Fiji this weekend?
Yeah, we'll wait and see. Kells was running around passing a football out there today. You know, it's a bit of a rib injury, so we'll see. You know, front rowers were just in the old day, you'd jab it up and get out there and play.
He doesn't pass the ball anyway, so is he all right?
Well, that's what was good to get him passing the football, so it was great. We'll wait and see. We'll give these guys a couple of days of training at the start of the week, see how their bodies evolve. Good thing is, you know, Derby performed really well on the weekend. We've got some quality players in the squad as well that are itching for a crack at it. Glenvar, who was out of it team on the weekend. So, you know, he's there. Lucas Ripley, Mason Gordon did really well a couple of weeks ago. So the benefit of being able to give some players some opportunities through Super, that when you do get injuries, that you can go to them and have full confidence in them, is where we're at the moment. We don't feel pressured to make a selection on a player, whether he's 50-50 and we could make things worse. So, wait and see, and name the team on Wednesday, Christy.
We'll see if we can get it before then. Always good to join and have it yarn to you. We can't really understate what you guys and even really contemplate what you guys are going through at the moment. So all the best for that. But it's really good to have you on the Roaring Pod.
No, my pleasure. Thanks for the invite. It was great to be on.
Yeah, thanks, Sarzi. And, you know, those selection headaches are only there because you've put together a good squad. So I'm sure, the guys are enjoying your leadership, particularly at the moment with a tough time. So all the best, mate.
No, thanks, Pup. And likewise, good luck to you. With Mitsubishi being going well, I still follow Japanese rugby very closely. And the Diner Boars have been having a good season. I know, 4 or 5 weeks to go, it's going to be interesting finish for the year.
It will be a ripper. No, I appreciate it, Salzy.
Awesome to be joined by Nick Stiles, and he's a guy that's got a lot on his plate, so we do appreciate him sparing it to join the podcast today. Hey, the side that they knocked off on the weekend, 27-21, the Waratahs at home in Sydney, that's an almighty blow for Darren Coleman's Tars. Did you watch the game live?
Yeah, I did. You know, and sorry, before we go into the parts of the game itself, it was really interesting chatting to Stilesy there. And, you know, he's talking about the Waratahs having a 6-day turnaround. He's talking about, you know, these emotional flows and bringing guys off the bench. And like, is Darren Coleman getting that kind of support? Is he getting that kind of support? Because to hear that, it just, I look at that game and I say, you know, Tars definitely should have beaten the Rebels. They should have, like with how they were playing beforehand, but they look fatigued. They looked tired. It was a slow game. And, yeah, I just wonder, hearing Stilesy talk about that, hearing him say that, you know, the Rebels had targeted these next few games, you know, are the Waratahs doing that? Are they actually, you know, setting the season up, or are they just kind of trying to roll the sleeves up and keep going until you're burnt out? It's interesting.
Well, you brought it up last week, so it was apt and it was fair enough to bring it up again today. And you think about someone like, the Fiji Drua, they beat the Force on the weekend and they've now won 8 from their last 9 home games. That tells you that they're a bloody difficult team to beat at home. And to your point, should they have gone, you know what, we're probably not going to win this, do we give some a cap or two, a jersey or two, or extra minutes to one or two different players?
I think what you said at the end there, give minutes. Like it's not we're going to lose, you know, what, you know, but it is difficult. But also off the back of us, you know, coming back with a 6-day turnaround with a match that against another Australian team, you must win and you should win. Mm. You know, the season looks different. If they won on the weekend, you start going, oh, all right, you know, they had a few close losses, but it could really start snowballing now. And particularly they're going to Canberra next week, which, you know, teams find extremely tough for the, you know, right reasons. So no, I look at that. I think it's poorly done. I think Australian rugby, we are very we are traditionally, you know, a tough, you know, we like rolling the sleeves up and, you know, put your best team out every week. But, you know, Super Rugby has evolved from the Super 10s, from Super 12s. It is a longer season, and you have to be a bit more tactical around your selection, I feel. So
it was also interesting hearing Nick talk about the planning that the Rebels had done. And I know that when I went down and spoke to Kevin Foote 14, 15 months ago before last year's season. And he was talking about contracts that we need to give longer and more security to players to be able to build to get to where we need to. And so he was talking about 5-year deals for certain players, for coaches, to try to ensure that everyone, including the board, the players and fans, were cognizant of where this group's going to go. Changing tact a little bit, I can't see how the Tars, if Angus Bell plays that game, he had a disc injury, whether or not he misses the next couple of weeks, we'll see. That came up last week. It didn't occur necessarily against the Drua in Fiji last week, but they lose Ned Hannigan, they lose Charlie Gamble. Once those three guys were ruled out on the eve of the match, I just thought this is going to be a really difficult game, particularly off your comments a week ago as well.
Yeah, the 6-day turnaround's a big thing. Like, you know, in isolation, playing a game, playing 6 days later, yeah, sure, you know, you should be able to get up, the program should cater for that. But it is like we're starting at the middle part of the season. There are a lot of tired bodies. There are a lot of emotional highs and lows from these close wins or close losses. But, you know, it was only a few weeks ago we were talking about the Tars flying, beating the Crusaders, you know, and how that's changed in 4 weeks. So, yeah, look, I don't want to harp on it. I am very much of the belief that is DC getting help, assistance in this part, because I don't think it's his job to be doing that. I think he needs to have someone like a Nick Styles who's looking long-term, who's looking, you know, a few weeks into it, saying, okay, how are we going to manage the, you know, our bigger bodies, you know, with the flight over, flight back, you know, short turnaround. I guess the proof's in the pudding. It doesn't seem like he has that support at the moment.
Well, Andrew Blades was, you know, the former World Cup winning prop, turned Wallabies assistant coach at times. He left his job last year where he was very much like Nick Styles, the general manager of the Waratahs, also acted as the scrum coach. So DC, in many respects, has kind of been doing two roles, and perhaps he saw a future as well as general manager if indeed the Waratahs wanted to go in a different direction as head coach. Perhaps it's still open, but it's going to be really difficult having won only one from their opening six games when it was revealed earlier in the year that the Waratahs board would make a decision 5 rounds into the comp. If you look at the results at the moment, it seems like it's only heading to one way without necessarily putting the cart before the horse and saying Darren Coleman's gone. There will be conversations in the background around who might be there to replace him if indeed they do head down that direction. There's some candidates who are more experienced than others, but I wrote a story today and I know that the Sydney Morning Herald touched upon it. I had a good chat with Ian Payton on Friday evening following the game as well around who might they turn to. And Michael Checker is the most obvious guy. He's in France at the moment looking for a job. He won the only title with them back in 2014, which they, 10 years ago, so they was thinking about that. You know Czech better than most. A couple of World Cup campaigns there. A few other candidates, Nathan Gray, who's the current junior Wallabies coach, former Tars assistant, Checker's former right-hand man, Andy Friend, who's just spent 5 years up in Ireland, Jason Gilmore, who's the current assistant coach with the Waratahs, is the current Australia Ray coach too, and perhaps even a left field option like a Stephen Hoyles, who led Randwick to the Shoot Shield title last year and has spent time with the Australian Sevens program as well. Is there someone out of that list or one or two guys, you know them all pretty well, like what's your initial instinct around which way this might go?
Yeah, as we're speaking before the pod, I think we went through the names and, you know, I've got a kind of a personal affiliation with most of the guys, which shows that you probably played a little bit too long. But no, look, I look at that and you look at a guy like Cech, obviously only Waratah coach to win the competition. You know, what's in it for him? You know, what can he achieve there? And I think your point about potentially getting back to the Wallabies, you know, but that's, you know, that's probably a pretty decent carrot considering what's coming up, particularly with 2027. But I probably more, I look at it and I go, well, are we going to say that the last 3 years with Darren Coleman was a waste and then we're just going to throw the baby out of the bathwater and start afresh? Like, I really hope we just stop making the same mistakes, you know. And do we have someone in there who was seeing what's happening, you know, saw what Darren Coleman did well and what he maybe could have done better, and then at least give it a springboard to whoever is potentially the next coach? And I worry about that because we have a tendency to treat our coaches and just get rid of them and start afresh, and there is no kind of long-term type of planning. You know, when Checa left, there was a decent, you know, fall off afterwards. Was there someone there, particularly on a, you know, like a general manager or a CEO, who has actually got that stability and kind of can see the team move forward? And yeah, the head coach is just a part of that journey. So yeah, I worry about that.
You're not the only person. I got a text message from someone closely involved in Australian rugby who said the exact same thing. What's happening from a high performance perspective? What's the player accountability in here? Where's the responsibility? Who's to blame? It's surely not just the head coach. And I do tend to agree. I know in the NRL, the AFL, you generally get sacked, a coach finds a job elsewhere. And to your point around, we don't do a great enough job about keeping these coaches. I know I wrote a story about it last month. You know, they get chewed up and spat out, and where do they next go? So that's a conversation in itself if indeed they do make a change, because I still think that Darren Coleman has a place in Australian rugby to give. He's got 20 years of coaching experience. There's not many guys out there currently who have got that experience in the men's game and in the women's game, which is something where Australian rugby needs to invest in much, much more. You know, but from a high performance perspective, Rugby Australia is going to be more involved in this process than perhaps past. And I know that Peter Horn spoke about that last week. They perhaps might get an independent person involved to run a review around what's going on and do changes need to be made. But it's a really tricky one because the Waratahs, it's the biggest state, one of the biggest rugby communities, populations in Australian rugby. And when the Waratahs have only won one from their opening six, which is very similar to what happened last year, you start to go, well, we can't afford New South Wales to struggle, particularly in ahead of the Lions year, particularly in the road to the World Cup. So it is an important decision that they get right. And I feel for Darren Coleman here, but it just points to there being a change, I think, at season's end.
Yeah, look, I'm not going to stand here and say, oh, one from six is acceptable. It clearly isn't. I just want to delve further into it. Like, if Darren Coleman's feeling pressure from, you know, above, and then he's picking his team based off getting some short-term results so, you know, he can keep his job, I feel that's a failure from above. Like, he shouldn't be under that kind of pressure, because we should be looking at the season with everything else in context. And I feel we have a tendency in Australian rugby to go to the shiny thing, to go to the new, you know, sugar hit. Eddie Jones, perfect example. You know, like, look where that's kind of left us. You know, we had some kind of long-term planning before that, and it's nice to see us implement, get someone like Peter Horn into the environment, into the Australian rugby. And I would like to see that, you know, kind of translated down to a club level, because I feel, you know, if anything, there's probably more to do there. And rather than just throwing out, you know, what we've done the last few years and getting a new one, maybe actually put some long-term planning in place, because it's, you know, a team like the Waratahs is so important to Australian rugby. We need them to succeed, and not just short-term, but long-term. And I think, there needs to be a bit of planning around that.
One team that is flying, though, at the moment is the ACT Brumbies. It's a tough thing to go up to Brisbane and beat a Les Kiss coach red side that has gone from strength to strength this year. But that was a first-class victory. It was described as test match intensity by Les Kiss himself, as well as Justin Harrison. What were your thoughts on the game?
Yeah, look, I think that last point you mentioned, test match intensity, I don't think I've seen a Australian Derby in the last few years, if I'm being honest, that has had that. You know, back in the day, you'd have your Queensland, New South Wales, you know, when I was playing the, you know, Waratahs versus Brumbies or Brumbies versus Reds, you could earmark them or you could, you know, pin them and you knew they were going to be high level and I still remember how intense they were. And I reckon the last few years, it's been a little bit up and down in terms of that intensity, but this game delivered. I thought it was great. It was obviously we're going to give plaudits to the Brumbies, but the Reds were brilliant as well, and they could have easily won that.
Well, you look at the way that they started, and they were so quick. They were playing with such accuracy early on, and clearly they get the opening try in the first couple of minutes through Josh Flew, perhaps a bit fortuitous with the ball going through Hunter Paisami's hands, but. Then there's a couple of try savers, Corey Toole and Charlie Kale, which were, I thought, so pivotal in just blunting that momentum that the Reds had in that opening 10 minutes.
Yeah, it was huge momentum, and I think you're right, because if the Reds score there, you start going, they've got dominance, you know, whereas the feel of the game was the Reds were on top, but they hadn't really got the rewards for it. And thanks to guys like, you know, Toole and Kale, you know, these big plays that they were making are just as important as Tom Wright going over for a double, you know, like, and those are the things that matter in test matches, you know, often defense wins those kind of games. And yeah, I honestly thought it was great. I really, really enjoyed it. There was so much to kind of like about it. I loved how the Reds were using Pattaya a lot off his wing. You know, probably an argument to be made, is he a 15 or is he a winger? But the way they found him, the way Lana found him, you know, particularly at the back of a hard-running center, I thought was great. He got dominance over the line. Tom Wright, brilliant. You know, he had one of his better games in a game that was, as we mentioned, you know, like a test match. So, it was good. And then, oh, gosh, obviously, Noah kicking goals. Yeah, like it was nothing. I think that's huge. That's big for his confidence. I'm sure he'll feel a lot more confident going on into other games, and it'll translate to his running performance as well. But, you know, we spoke about test matches and translating that test matches. It's clear how important having a good goal kicker is.
Yeah, he's kicking at 85%, 4 from 4 on the weekend. You compare that with Tom Liner, who missed not an easy penalty, but a penalty that you expect to kick, and then a conversion from Lawson Crichton later on. I thought that missed shot from Tom Liner was significant in a couple of ways, because up until that point in time, the Reds were kicking for the corner. And then they didn't get the pay that they wanted, so they decide to have a shot at goals and they miss. And it was just here's an admission that the Brumbies have aimed up, their physicality's there, and we haven't been able to get the pay we want. And then you miss a shot at goals. And then you see Noah Lolesio on the stroke of halftime, land run from probably 45 out on the angle, and they take the lead. And I thought it showed the skill and the understanding, the coaching nous from Stephen Larkham, I thought, by bringing on those guys, stacking the bench, having Tom Hooper to help me out here. There's Nick Frost that came on as well. Luke Reimer made an impact at the breakdown. Those three guys I thought were probably the difference, just by increasing the pace in the second half, and that's the physical nature of it, because you know, they looked like they had almost lost it there when Rhys van Dijk gets shown 10 minutes for bringing down a rolling maul, and then Josh Nash shortly after gets a try there to get 2 tries in 4 minutes. So it was a really great show of resilience from the Brumbies and their decision makers to get them across the line.
Yeah, it definitely was. And you know, it's easy to look at the game and just look at the score, but, you know, the feel of it and having the Reds were clearly dominant at the start, but they deserved, or they should have had more than seven in front. And for the Brumbies to, you know, stem the flow, or, you know, stop the bleeding, they kept it at seven. That was huge for them, because we know games start to even up. You know, they'll get more possession later in the game, and to come away from that only seven down was huge. But the Reds started the second half really well, and I got a little bit nervous thinking, oh, you know, this might blow out. But yeah, it just shows the importance of a good goal kicking team. It shows the importance of defense. And you know, the game we've already mentioned, that's test match. Like, that's why we're mentioning it, because things like goal kicking and defense won the game.
So you played 10 and 12. I think your preference was 10 throughout your career, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, but I was probably better at 12. But I just wanted to play 10 more, less concussions.
The reason why I bring that up is because Jordan Bataille's preference is to play fullback. He's made that point known throughout his career. He's played a fair bit of 13 as well. I'm curious. He was training at 12 at stages last year under Eddie Jones as well in his environment. I still think there's actually a place potentially there if you're wanting a bigger ball runner at 12. But for someone like Jordan, you know him, your family, where do you think his best position is? Because you touched upon it just beforehand around the wing and fullback, but he did thrive out in the wing.
Yeah, he did. And look, in that team, I think, you know, him playing at wing is definitely, they're not losing anything, particularly with a guy like Jock Campbell at 15. So I think the question, yeah, it needs context. Are you going to be using them? If you're not going to use them, then, yeah, chuck him at fullback where he can get more touches. If you're going to be using them, you know, first phase, second phase, out the back, hitting hard lines, then, yeah, great. I think it's very easy to, you know, when you're a player, I always wanted to play one more in because I want to touch the ball more. But, you know, my preference isn't necessarily what's best for the team. And, you know, we've got to see what is actually best for the team and then, you know, pick based on that, pick based on strengths of other players. You know, having Jock Campbell, who is, you know, a great link-up player. So then, yeah, finding ways to get Jordan involved, I think is great. It's a tricky one. I don't think the players' preferences is necessarily the moral true north. The team has to kind of supersede that.
It was fair enough touching upon the fullbacks there, and Jock Campbell, he's a quality player that the Reds will desperately try to keep, I think, this year. Mac Greeley, another one I think is impressive, hard worker, just does the simple things quite well. Tom Wright, quality performance once again. And it seemed like he almost was doing less on the weekend. The tries that he did, they weren't trying to conjure something up out of nothing. He just were well taken, a step on the outside, managed to hold Jock Campbell once or twice and get past him. They now host the Waratahs this weekend. It's a big game. It's probably the match of the round, and it's broken into four matches over the next 3 weeks with a couple of buys in there for the various sides. It seems like the favourites here will be very, very much the Brumbies. Do you give the Tars a chance, or without Angus Bell, is it going to be an almighty difficult task heading down to a GIO stadium, Bruce Stadium?
Yeah, look, a fully fit team. It's a tough gig playing down there. And as I say, I don't want to harp on it, but then, you know, you look at Drua away, Brumbies away. That's as hard as it gets in this competition. So you have to win your home games against the Rebels, which they haven't. So, yeah, I think it will be tough. On Tom Wright, though, I was lucky enough last week. I went down to watch the Brumbies train, and I was really interested, and I was taken aback by how much of a leadership role he has in that team. I spoke to someone a couple of days ago and, like, saying, you know, who are the leaders in that team with Alan not there? And Tom Wright was front and center, you know, even though he's a fullback and he's out of the way. And you saw once he scored a try on the weekend, there was a quick shot. Stan went to a huddle. Yeah. He was like, usually a fullback comes in and starts talking. You say, shut up, mate, and get back. Like, you know, he's not even close enough to the action. But Tom's a leader. And he's influential. People follow him, and you can see that. So I think it's really cool to see how he's responded to, you know, what would have been a difficult year last year.
Yeah, what else did you notice from your stepping into your own digs there last Thursday?
Yeah, it was good. So I went down to just, you know, have a watch of training, and just because, you know, interested in a bit of a rugby nuff. But they've got a good program there. It's not by fluke. They had a little bit of a testy kind of a session where you could argue it was a bit scrappy. But I was really interested to hear the chat and the huddle afterwards, where guys like Tom Wright and Ryan Lonigan and Darcy Swain were saying, you know, like it's an all and ongoing process. You know, what could we have done better? And there was just a really open communication, real honest. They're a team that I enjoyed when I was there that were very, very hard on each other, and it was very, very much player-led and coach-supported. And, yeah, it's they've got a good thing going now, and I don't think it's not a fluke that they're winning on the weekends.
Yeah, well, when they get Alan Alonso back as well, they're going to be an almighty difficult proposition anywhere they go. We touched upon it right at the start of the pod. Those conditions in Lakatoka were just extraordinary. Fiji, fair play to them. They managed those conditions so well. Yeah. It was hilarious seeing some of those tries, and I think even the reaction of Frank Lomani
on the back.
yeah. The try gets scored by his winger, and he just decides to dive over himself, and he made himself very well acquainted with Nick White, your old mate as well.
Yeah, he does. Look, they're two great competitors, and they're always going to do that. I'm interested to see. We had Mick Byrne show us his view from his room a few weeks ago. I think it might have been a little bit different in Lautoka last weekend. But now, look, Drua, always tough over there. And Force started really well. Was probably an indication of where they needed to try keep the game, with, you know, with through penalties and mauls. I'm a bit concerned now with the Force and their decision making later in games. I worry about how they're managing games. There was a situation where I think the Drua were down. The Force had an opportunity to go to the line with a player up advantage. Chose to go for the points, which, you know, sure, could do that. But then later in the game, again, even later, they needed two scores.
A scrum?
To get a bonus. Yeah. Yeah. A scrum. And a scrum from in front, wasting time. Like, that ball should be tapped and gone, and just, yeah, you know, you should be going for it. And I'm wondering, is Donaldson having these conversations? Isaac Fiennes, is he having these conversations with his 10? Because for me, that's an error that they shouldn't be making. Because if you leave Lautoka and you come away with a bonus point, you probably go, oh, yeah, you know, it would have been great to win. But realistically, a bonus point away in those kind of conditions, fair enough. But they gave themselves no chance by choosing to scrum late in the game, which... Yeah, so I do worry. There's a few weeks ago, I had a few question marks about that as well. So I think it's something that they'll have to develop, particularly with a guy like Nick White not on the field later in the game, who would usually make those decisions.
Yeah, I completely agree. I was shaking my head going, what's going on here? Because I'd seen it, I think I saw it with the Drua against Moana Pacifica in Super Round, where they also similarly decided to take the scrum, and it's... Hmm. Any smart team takes 100 seconds out of there with one collapse. And what I did enjoy on the weekend was the officiating from Ben O'Keefe with the Reds and Brumbies. There was a few scrum resets around that 74th, 75th minute, and it was immediately time off in between the three of them. So we need to see more of that, particularly in the last 10 minutes.
Just on that, like, yeah, we do. But also, you know, forwards, props, like, yeah, sure, they're mostly pretty stupid, but they know how to they know how to waste time. And we, look, as a player, we would do it all the time. When you have a player who's – when you're down a player, you know, so you need to get through that 10 minutes to manage a yellow card, you'll get in scrum, and then just before they call engage, we'll get a prop to kind of stand up and go, oh, he didn't like the footing, he didn't like the space, you know, clock goes another 45 seconds, you know, and they know how to manage this. They do it all the time, you know, just managing, oh, no, he's a little bit closer, sir, you know, stand up, reset. It's all part of the game. And like I said, I've used it many times in the past. And so to see Ben O'Keefe be aware of that, great. There's a safety issue in terms of rushing scrums. So I just think let's stop the clock. Like, just stop the clock. Easy.
it's the simplest solution. And you know what? I've never heard of a broadcaster worry about a game going a little bit longer either. So
I don't think the company sponsoring it will be too filthy as well. More airtime for them. So now, even if it's the last 10 minutes, because if we're worried about games going too far, just kind of understanding that. However, it seems a bit weird to apply a rule for, you know, 10 minutes of the game and not the previous 70. But teams use it. It needs a reaction, I guess, or a response.
Yeah, that'll be fascinating. Look, we had a nice comment late last week on the Apple app, and I think it's probably fair to draw attention to it. And this guy, Chicken Carcass, whoever it is, it's a great name. So thanks very much to that. But Matt Timur and Christy have a good thing going. Always a good rugby chat. I know I'm enjoying it. I think you are as well, Matt. But it's good that people listening are getting engaged with it as well, heaps on social media and Twitter across the weekend. So please continue to reach out, get in touch. And if there's things that you're liking, let us know. If there's things that you want tweaked, also, you know, we're all ears and we're doing this for you, not for us, so to speak. So thank you. And it's a big game for the Tars this week. As we know, the Western Force have got a tricky one against the Blues. Moana Pacifica against the Chiefs, but the Rebels and Fiji, that's a massive one for those two sides. If the Rebels can go back-to-back, that'll mean that they're four wins into the season halfway through. So it's a big one for them too. Great to have a chat with Nick Styles. I think we're both going to rush off because Mouse season finale is on right now, and we're probably going to go listen to that one.
Yep, Jack and Tori. Not sure if they'll stay together, so it's a big old night. But, I appreciate all the feedback, and, we love it. And tell us what you want changed, if that's Christy's chest hair or whatnot. So
that's not going anywhere, mate.
Very good. Lucky you. At least you've got the option.
All right. Until next week. Thanks.